Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. It is 8:52. I'm Mike Dorber. Joining me in the studio right now, Chris Orwell with the New Mexico Museum of Space History. Chris, how you doing today?
Feeling better than last week, you know. So when we were in those last few days before opening up the exhibit, feeling much better now. So you know, now that everything's open and everything worked out fine,
cool.
And people are enjoying it. Yeah, so yeah, I'm feeling much better now.
There you go. So we got the sci-fi sci-fact exhibit open.
Yep,
and we just finished up with Holiday on the Hill.
Yeah, so we had another successful Holiday on the Hill up there. A lot of folks came up, enjoyed launched tons of air rockets. Got launched, you know. So a whole bunch of solar system ornaments got made. In fact, actually, we had all the planets there, pictures of them, so that kids could pattern their ornaments after the planets. We even had exoplanets on there, you know, so a couple of the Kepler exoplanets, you know, so from distant stars up there, so that people could, if they wanted to, you know, do one that was a little slightly out of our solar system.
The world.
Yeah, we had folks that came up and talked to Tony Gondola, who does a lot of the Astronomy League work for us, and kind of heads up our astronomy discussions, programs, etc. Mm-hmm. In any case, though, and he was up there talking to folks about telescopes, you know, and some people brought theirs up, and he helped show them how to use them. So yeah, you know, overall, you know, successful day. A lot of food was brought in for Runner's Refuge. So yeah, successful day, you know. So Saturday done with, you know. So there was a lot of staff up there working all day long.
I bet there was. Did we fill up a pickup again?
You know, actually, I need to find out what the final numbers were. I haven't gotten a picture of it yet. Once again, I immediately on Monday, my focus shifted 100% to the Governor's Gallery.
There you go.
And trying to get the exhibit ready to go, because we got to put that in in the second week there in January.
Yeah.
Additionally, the second week in January, we have a team coming out from Florida that's coming out to inspect the Little Joe II rocket, the Redstone missile, and also the Matador, and take a look at a couple other artifacts for us. And they're going to present to us a restoration plan for all of those, refurbishment plan, and so hopefully, you know, not hopefully, we will be getting all of that done this year, in 2024. So you know, getting ready for them to come out. We've got installers that are coming out to put in the new sensors, satellites, and selfies interactive exhibit on the third floor. So that's happening right here at the beginning of January. You know, and we've got new walls going up on a couple of the floors literally yesterday and today. So yeah, you know, we've just it was jumped from one thing to the other. So
I'll be able to go in there and get a selfie with Telstar.
Exactly how it works. Yeah, so it's seeing yourself more so in all the different ways that satellites look back at the Earth. It's a joking name, you know, as it were. But the idea is that you're going to have a visual camera, an infrared camera, and a UV camera, and be able to see yourselves in those different frequencies. And the different ways that you look all at the same time. No. You know, so it's fun exhibit. It's going to be the draw into the satellite gallery. And so, in fact, actually, construction started on the satellite gallery that's going to open up in March. That started on Monday as well. So yeah, it's a busy time. That's good. Like I said the last time I was in here, we're opening up six new exhibits over the next, you know, essentially 12 months between this December and next December. Six new exhibits in the museum. So yeah, we're running it full tilt, you know. So, and it doesn't it depends if it's contractors coming in to do the work, whether it's us, you know, some combination thereof, you know, because we have contractors that are coming in putting in the walls, you know, for light control on the rampways right now. But we have our staff that's putting in some new walls and drywall inside the gallery areas, you know, and wiring things up. And then we have outside electricians that come in and do a lot of wiring, because we're revamping the lighting in a lot of the gallery galleries as well. So yeah, it's just
crazy.
Just a lot of things.
Well, you guys got to do some of the work because you got to keep Mike Shinneberry busy.
Mike Shinneberry work? Do those things go together?
You set that one up.
So, but yeah. Once again, though, that's education programs.
Well,
you know, not necessarily build. We don't like Mike around power tools. So yeah.
So we
keep him away from the power tools. We let him keep doing the education demonstrations and lectures. And
he's dangerous enough with the computer.
Yeah. There you go.
So
but yeah, and our education department is just charging away. So yeah, they're having fun. We got lots of programs that are on the books for next year. We're talking with the university right now about special potential STEM programs during the summer. So more to follow on that as things progress. So in fact, we're meeting again on it today. So yeah.
STEM programs, that's actually a good step into the future.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you have to, you know. Yeah. So because the you know, and for people who are sitting there going STEM, you know, we throw that term around all the time now, but not everybody knows what it means. Science, technology, engineering, and math, you know, mm-hmm. so and occasionally you get thrown in there STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, you mm-hmm. know, so in combining the arts and the sciences, but the main push is really towards pure STEM mm-hmm. because we are living in a technical world.
Yeah.
No ifs, ands, or buts, and the future forward is through the technology, and we as a nation, we as a state, we as a community need to be leading in those areas, you know, and so making sure that kids at an early age, and realistically it's late elementary and really middle school that are the years when kids do or don't get excited
right.
about STEM fields, you know, as a future career choice, as a future, you know, for them, for whether it's research, education, jobs, you know, working in the technical field, et cetera. So, but that's, you know, that's the way to go. And, you know, heck, they're very high-paying careers.
Yeah, no doubt.
Who are they high-paying careers, you know? So
well,
I made the wrong decision. I mean, I went through a STEM field, so, but I ended up running a museum, so,
yeah.
You know. So.
Well, you know, when you talk about STEM and you look back, when you think about it, my grandparents saw the Industrial Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
My parents and I as a young boy saw the first man in space.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
As I grew a little bit more, my parents still around, we saw the man on the moon, Neil Armstrong.
Yep.
But since then, we've saw the advent of cell phones,
mm-hmm.
computers, missions to Mars.
Yeah.
You know, and then space again, space stations, more trips to the moon. And now we're seeing this whole revolution with space tourism now.
Yep. Space tourism.
We are seeing
reusability of space. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think every generation is going to see a bigger leap in technology and different things like that than as we go through the years. My parents saw a little bit. My grandfather saw a little bit. My parents saw a little bit. I saw more. Our children are seeing more. Our grandchildren are going to see even more.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it depends on, you know, what you take a look at, you know, the revolution in communications technology where,
yeah.
you know, when I was born, we were still, you know, landline phones with
mm-hmm.
dials and, you know, the, you know, phones ringing, et cetera. Now, you know, your watch, you know, you can communicate on your watch with a little
yeah.
earpiece in
Dick
while
Tracy.
You're walking, while you're out at sea, you know,
yeah.
so it's just, you know, it's incredible. And you think about those folks, you know, we talk about space. Gee, we're a space history museum. We talk about space quite a bit. So, but think about the person who was born in 1900.
Yeah.
You know, so, and maybe lived to be 75 years old.
Right.
You know, so what did they see? Well, we weren't flying.
Yeah.
In planes when
right.
they were born, when
yeah.
they were young, when they
yeah.
were in elementary
That's
school.
Right.
We weren't, you know, planes didn't exist.
Right.
So then planes existed.
Yeah.
And we were flying. And by the time they were, you know, in their elder years, we were landing on the moon.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, those are amazing leaps. You know, it all depends where those leaps are made, you know, whether
yeah.
they're in the medical technology, in the communications, in medicines, in flight, in space, you know, we're seeing it across the board. And we will, you know, that's what humans do, you know,
yeah.
so, but the pace of change and improvement these days is almost frightening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just because it happens so quickly.
I think about the advent of the computer from
mm-hmm.
Pong to that. Disturbing sign up.
Yep.
Trying to log in.
Oh, the log on? Yeah. I love that sound, actually. You know, the old dial-up sound?
Yeah, I got to get a copy.
I have fond 1990s memories of that, you know, so.
I got to find that.
Yeah. Oh, it's easy. Yeah, you can find that sound anywhere.
Yeah, I got to get that and get that on here. So, but yeah, but, you know, and then now you got to, there's more power in this thing than in the Apollo that took us to the moon.
Your watch has more power than the Apollo computers did, essentially. Yeah. So, you know, depending on what kind of watch you have. But, yeah, it's just, once again, and we're going to see that. So, you know, the improvements in what we are doing in spaceflight, you know, and the improvements there. Just look at, you know, SpaceX this year. They're coming this close to hitting 100 missions this year. Think about that. One entity launching, you know, with 100 launches in 1 year. I mean, that's just insane.
That's like
I think they're going to make it up. It's either 96 or 97 by the end of December.
That's almost one launch every 4 or 5 days.
Every few days. Every few days. And, you know, there's times here over the next couple of weeks where they launched two rockets within hours of each other. They have launched three rockets within hours of each other, you know, two in Florida, one in Vandenberg and stuff. So, you know, it's, and once again, that's just one company. You can have multiple companies doing, you know, if you go to the app I use is called Next Space Flight. Great app. It tells you about upcoming launches, past launches. It does you know, news for what's going on in the space world, the space launch world, as well as just generic things that are going on as well. It's a great thing. And if you just take a look on there, the number of launches every single day that are going on, you know. So we here don't necessarily think about it. Those in the Space Coast, you know, down in Florida, those living around Vandenberg, you know, those maybe living up near Wallops Island, or those living near launch sites in Russia or China, or wherever they are, think about it a lot more. I mean, the Chinese are launching rockets at an incredible rate as well. They are accelerating their programs in space. We obviously are as well, because we now have so many companies that are entering into the field. Heck, Blue Origin just launched from a couple hours to the east of us here in at Corn Ranch at their launch site there in Texas yesterday with another one of their New Shepard rockets.
Wow.
The first time they flew it, was it 15 months? I think it was 15 months from the last time when they had the abort on the flight. That was fun to watch. In any case, when they had the abort, because I'm watching that launch live, you know, I watch a lot of these live, you know, so, and then all of a sudden it's like, that's not right, you know. as you just see the capsule, you know, shooting away from the rocket, you know, it's like, that's not supposed to happen. So in any case, but yesterday's launch went just fine for them, you know. And they're, you know, they're flying the New Shepard, but the big push for them is their new Glenn rocket, which NASA is betting a lot of money on as well, and has actually planned flights for space probes and other objects on the new Glenn rocket, which hasn't even flown yet, you know. So NASA's you know, already planning payloads on that. So, and we should launch next year. That's the big question, is will the new Glenn rocket launch next year? And once that, but I will tell you, from having been out at Kennedy Space Center over the last year, that the construction around Kennedy for all these entities, whether it's SpaceX, whether it's Blue Origin, other companies, there's a lot of other companies that are starting to get in launch business in the communities surrounding Kennedy Space Center. It's huge. It's huge. Wow. In fact, actually, you know, so the construction for the Blue Origin facilities shocked me. I could not believe how huge all of their facilities had grown to, from what I originally saw.
Wow.
You know, 7 years ago when they started doing the construction. So it's absolutely amazing what's going on in the space world, and what we're seeing as far as the changes, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, we go back to, it's routine now. We don't even necessarily think that it's that amazing that SpaceX launches these rockets, brings the boosters back down to Earth, and lands them either on land at one of the pads there at Kennedy or Vandenberg, or lands them on barges out at sea. You know, I mean, so just the idea of taking the first stage of a rocket, using it to boost, you know, a payload up into space, and then bringing it back and landing it on a barge out at sea.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's you know, amazing, so and yeah. what's even more amazing, and if people get a chance, I need to take a look. I forget. The SpaceX is doing a Falcon Heavy launch. So the regular Falcon rocket has got one single first stage booster, and it's got 9 engines on the bottom of it, so 9 of the Merlin engines. When they launch a Falcon Heavy, essentially they have 3 first stages, one center core and then 2 boosters on the outside. So and each of those boosters has 9 engines on it. So all total, there's 27 engines firing.
Wow.
In any case, well, that's nothing compared to Starship, where they have over 30 firing.
Yeah.
You know, so, but in any case, so when they launch, you know, the 2 boosters and the center core are all firing, and then eventually the 2 side boosters, you know, separate. They come back to Earth. They land at Kennedy Space Center. Actually, they land at Cape Canaveral Space Force Station. Mm-hmm. Even though they're launched from Kennedy Space Center, they land next door at the Cape Canaveral Space Force Station. In any case, though, they land there. And then the center stage, if they're bringing it back, can land on a booster. It lands on a barge out at sea. So they'll land 3 boosters
wow.
almost simultaneously. You know, so now I think on this flight, the center booster is going to continue boosting the package. It's a Space Force package. Yeah. And it's the Air Force's... excuse me, the Space Force's, I got to get used to that. The Space Force's winged X-37,
yeah.
which we have a version of up in our rocket park. In any case, though, so that's what's going to be flying on this one, and I think the center booster is going to continue firing, so they're not bringing it back. It's expendable in this situation. But yeah, the idea of landing these 3 boosters at one time, simultaneously controlled, yada yada, that's sci-fi there. That is sci-fi, you know, so come to life.
Yeah. You know, I found a couple of things interesting that you said. First of all, the Shepard and the Glenn rocket. They're naming these things after our first.
Yep. Shepard flew a suborbital flight in the Mercury program on his Freedom 7 capsule. And then on Friendship 7, John Glenn was our first U.S. astronaut to go into orbit. Mm. So their suborbital rocket is the new Shepard. Their orbital rocket is the new Glenn.
Wow.
So yeah, and that's Blue Origin. So and it's tough to keep track of all the different companies.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know. So I mean, heck, in Virgin Galactic, you know, so they've got the current, you know, spaceship that they're flying. Well, they're building a new Delta class.
Wow.
You know, in Arizona, they're going to be building a new Delta class rocket that will allow them to fly even more frequently. So once again, iterations of improvement happening, you know, frequently within 4, 5, 6 years, you know. So it's amazing how quickly things are changing, let alone, you know, Sierra Space is about to fly with their Dream Chaser, and there's, you know, the and I love some of the the names that they come up with, you know, so of these things, whether it's the, you know, whether it's SpaceX maybe naming one of their barges, you know, "Of Course I Still Love You." You know, you know, so even though they'd had all the, you know, the issues with the rockets not being able to land on it. So, you know, Alpha, there's an Alpha rocket from Firefly that's coming up, and the rocket's called Fly the Lightning.
Oh.
You know, that's coming up here in the next week. So, I mean, you just have some humorous names as folks are getting into this world and how they're kind of trying to keep it fresh.
Yeah, no
as
doubt
well,
about
you
that.
Know, so and connect with the public as well, because, yeah.
Yeah, well, the other thing you mentioned was the mundane, you know. I remember the line in Apollo 13, well, people just don't watch anymore, you know, and that's why they were moved up to 13, and they were going to end the moon launches and stuff. Of course, we know how 13 turned out, but
yeah,
it's that line there. It's almost like, it's every day.
Why aren't they broadcasting this live? And it's like, people
lost interest.
Yeah, you know, in the Apollo program, it was absolutely amazing. You know, once we landed on the moon, interest kind of dropped quite significantly, you know, so the shuttle flew, you know, and people were very interested right at first. And then it just kind of was like, you know, there's another shuttle flight going on, you know, by the time we got into the last, you know, couple of decades of shuttle launches. So, you know, and SpaceX, you know, has captured the imagination, but people are starting to consider it kind of routine, you know, so it's, people can get very complacent with success. If you're successful at something,
no doubt. And this all ties back to our sci-fi exhibit.
You know,
this is where we're going. Because there has been things out of sci-fi
mm-hmm.
that has led to some things in real life.
Oh, constantly. Yeah. It's, you know, and this goes back to, you know, when we get into the first types of science fiction where you talk about proto science fiction, and that's kind of the era of going back all the way to maybe to 1818 with Mary Shelley and Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people consider a monster movie, but it really has a lot of elements of science fiction in it, you know, so, and the science that was utilized, et cetera. And, you know, heck, that influenced, you know, the creation of the automatic external defibrillators that we're used to today, and the defibrillators, you know, so where the first one that was used was actually a guy with a car battery, who zapped a kid on an operating table and brought him back to life, you know, so, you know, things like that, or, you know, written in in the 1800s, you know, Jules Verne and H.G. Wells, and what they wrote about. Or Edward Bellamy writing in 1888 a book called Looking Backward. It was about, you know, looking from the year 2000 back towards 1887 and all the things that had come about during that time frame, and talks about, you know, essentially credit cards, you know, being utilized and, you know, matching up how we see the, you know, see them used today. If you take a look at, you know, the Star Trek with the communicator, you know, and we think, oh, the flip phone. Well, it's kind of fun because the first real mobile phone was Motorola's DynaTAC, you know, which came out in 1989.
It's a brick.
And, giant brick phone. We got one on display in the museum, and next to it we have one of the MicroTACs, which was the second evolution, where the bottom flipped open, you know, and the speaker was in the flip open portion on the bottom. Still big. You're not going to want to stick it in your pocket and walk around with it, you know. So, so still not, you know, completely portable. But still, you could carry it around with you, you know, and utilize it. And many of us remember, you know, pulling out the antenna, you know, so and things like that. So, and then in 1996, we get the StarTAC, which actually is a small handheld. You flip open the top. You can actually whip it open if you wanted to. And we called it a flip phone because you could flip it open just like you could a communicator.
Right.
And it was essentially the same size as a communicator. And the Motorola folks recognized that.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, TAC, the DynaTAC, the MicroTAC, the StarTAC, that stood for total area coverage. In any case, though, when they got to naming that third iteration of phones, they were like, this looks like a communicator. Let's call it the StarTAC.
Yeah.
In honor of Star Trek, you know. Yeah. So it all depends. But there's so many things, you know.
Yeah.
So Victor Appleton wrote books in the 1910s. One of them was Tom Swift and his electric rifle.
Yeah.
That was written about, you know, there were a series of boys' books, you know, written about a young boy, you know, going with a group across Africa, and he invents an electric rifle.
Wow.
You know, and the idea of stunning the creatures, you know, and a NASA researcher engineer looked at that, you know, was a fan of those books and said, I think I could make that.
Wow.
So he did. He ended up creating an electric gun, essentially, which we call a taser nowadays, which he called a taser as well, you know, so used by law enforcement all over the world, non-lethal way of taking people down, saved hundreds of thousands of lives, very likely, because it gives law enforcement a non-lethal way of dealing with people in incidents that they need to take down but don't necessarily want to do it, you know, by killing them.
Right.
In any case, though, but taser, we don't even think about the, you know, we just think, oh yeah, they use the taser, you know, don't tase me, bro, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a part of our lexicon these days, you know, so, but that comes from the word taser, which, you know, we all use. Well, taser is actually an acronym, TASER, and it actually stands for Thomas A. Swift and his electric rifle.
Wow.
TASER. So, you know, it came straight out of essentially a science fiction book, you know.
Wow.
So, you know, it's fun to see what influences come into the real world from science fiction, and it's fun to see what things from science fiction come into, you know, or from science fact come into science fiction as well, you know.
Yeah.
Whether it's you take a look at one of the suits we have on display in the museum is from the new Apple TV Plus TV series, For All Mankind. Great series. It's an alternative history science fiction. And essentially the Soviets beat us to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens afterwards. And it continues all the way up through landing on Mars, etc. Well, when we get to Mars, the suits that they're wearing, look shockingly like the Z2 suit that NASA was has been researching, you know, as one of the concepts for Mars suits, you know, and so, gee, I wonder why, you know. So it's because, once again, the people creating it said, let's take a look at what we're really doing here, what we're really using, and have a version of that in the show. You know? So, yeah, you know, it's science fact affects science fiction as well, and what we see in that. The Martian. So much of what we see in The Martian, the book and the movie, came out of what NASA was really doing, and then adaptations of it for the science fiction story that was written and produced. So, yeah, you know, Passengers. A lot of the ideas of long-duration, deep space flight, colonization, et cetera, you know, are all in there. So, yeah.
It's, that's fascinating. What are some of the things that people are going to see in the sci-fi, sci-fact?
And remember that these things are going to... The objects will change. The story doesn't change. That's the semi-permanent aspect of the exhibit. So they're going to see, you know, graphics about the history of sci-fi. They're going to see information about the mediums of science fiction. And when I say mediums, I'm talking about everything from newspapers, pulp magazines, radio, TV, movies, streaming, blah, blah, blah. They're going to see things that are fi to fact, you know, fiction to fact. You know, a couple of things I just talked about. You're going to see a copy of Victor Appleton's 1911 Tom Swift and his electric rifle next to a taser. Not a one that you could live fire, but yes, next to a taser, you know. So inside of there, or you're going to see the Looking Backward book next to comics. You're going to see the phones. You're going to see space suits, sci-fi suits. You know, it's tough to call them space suits, but suits and costumes from right now. We have ones on display from Firefly and Serenity. We have ones from Stranger Things, from Galaxy Quest, from For All Mankind, and wow, I just blanked on. It'll come back to me. In any case, though, you're going to see a bunch of the Star Trek items. Again, that we continue to keep the Star Trek material, the original props from the TV show.
Yeah.
You're going to see a section of V'ger from the Star Trek, the motion picture movie on display. And it's beautifully lit. Oh, my gosh, is it gorgeous.
Oh,
there's about an hour and a half of intros to sci-fi movies and TV shows that are running. And that's the soundtrack for the exhibit as well. The video of A Trip to the Moon from Georges Méliès back at the beginning of the 1900s is on display there. The radio playing the broadcast of the 1938 War of the Worlds broadcast. Movie posters, vintage movie posters up from a lot of the sci-fi movies. You know, so it's a lot of things like that. So Starship Troopers, Eureka, costumes and props. Yeah, so just a couple of things, you know, so...
Yep. Fascinating. Yeah, I mean, it really is, because like you said, and now I never thought about that, but now, because of everything we're doing, sci-fact is giving things for science fiction to do and talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Well, good science fiction writers take what is known about the factual and the scientific world and take that... and dream about what might be possible coming from it.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's, you know, that's Jules Verne. You know, it's not like we'd had submarines when Jules Verne wrote, you know, the Voyages Upon the Sea, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Wow. Yeah. Drifted off there. So, in any case, you know, it's not like he had that, you know, so, or when he wrote, the story of the From the Earth to the Moon, which was about the Columbia Gun Club from Baltimore, Maryland, or the Baltimore Gun Club, excuse me, creating a capsule called the Columbiad and shooting it from Florida up to the moon with a crew of three.
Wow.
On board. Sound vaguely familiar?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but that was written about 100 years before we ever actually did it.
Wow.
You know, so now, admittedly, they launched it out of a gun that was buried deep into the ground, you know, which, that doesn't work. But, you know, hey, okay. So, you know, it's science fiction gets some things right, and sometimes it gets stuff horribly wrong as well, which would be another great exhibit, you know, what sci-fi got wrong.
Yeah,
you know, so,
no doubt.
So at the moment, we're keeping it on what sci-fi got right.
That is fantastic. But even there, you mentioned Columbia, one of our space shuttles.
Yep. Yeah, and actually the name for the capsule. Yeah. And the Apollo 11 mission.
Oh, that's right. It was Columbia.
Yeah, the Eagle was the lunar lander. The Columbia was the capsule. So.
It's amazing how those names are being brought out of sci-fi into what's actually happening and stuff. And
yeah.
Of course, I like the idea of our first astronauts getting name recognition on the new stuff that's going on.
Yep. So. Well, you know, the Space Shuttle Enterprise, which is on display in New York, and is not one of the ones that flew in space. It was the one that was utilized for atmospheric testing and landing, the approach and landing tests. Enterprise was a famous research vessel as well. You know, so additionally, it was an aircraft carrier. Blah blah blah. There's a number of different things. If you go back, it wasn't supposed to be named Enterprise.
Yeah.
NASA changed the name of it to Enterprise because of a letter-writing campaign by fans of Star Trek.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how it ended up being changed, the name to being Enterprise. Changed to Enterprise. And NASA could use the PR, you know, so they did. And guess who was there at the, you know, unveiling and the christening of it, et cetera, the crew of the Starship Enterprise from the TV show. So,
wow,
yeah.
That's fascinating. You know, because there's that... scene in The Search for Spock where they come back and the whales and everything, and they had to go get some electrons or something from a reactor, and he goes, and Captain, it's the Enterprise
it's the Enterprise. My favorite line from that still is, you know, where are the nuclear vessels? Which I think is absolutely hilarious, because Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov in the TV series and then in the movies as well, you know, and if you listen to him, you know, his accent is so wrong, it isn't even funny.
I know.
First of all, anybody who speaks Russian or any Russian will, you know, the V is very pronounced in Russian.
Yeah,
so very pronounced. So the W pronunciation of V's is actually Polish. So it's funny, you know. So, but it worked, you know. So it worked, and it was just a characterization that, yeah, he kept up. Yeah, but yeah, we don't have the nuclear vessels.
Yeah. And you notice in the television series Enterprise, when they're doing the opening, they're actually showing a shuttle with Enterprise written on it.
Yep. Well, they show you the progression of different Enterprise
from
vessels
ships on
vessels,
as
they come
through,
up, you know, all the way through up until the first version of the Enterprise. Yeah, so
I guess I'm going to ask this question, and you think we'll ever get to the point that we'll actually have a Starship Enterprise that is like from the series? Some type of space vessel like that.
You mean space vessels that we are flying around through the solar system and everything? Yeah. So let's put it this
Starships,
way.
Starships,
so,
basically,
yeah,
with the large crews.
Do I think we're going to have very large spaceships that are going to be flying and going to other locations and everything? Yes. Yeah. 100%. Yes. I believe that wholeheartedly. The whole... warp drive or hyperspace or those sort of things, I don't know. The physics there, that's truly in the imagination still, you know, so of what can be done there, you know. So what we think we know, whether we're talking about tachyons or whether, you know, particles, you know, traveling faster than the speed of light, all these sort of things, that's still in the realm of the mind and theory.
I will say this, 100 years later, a guy said, I can build that Thomas whatever electric rifle, and he did.
Yep.
So maybe somebody is going to say in another 100 years,
and that's the
I can build that warp engine.
Yeah, that's the possibility. That's the beauty of sci-fi. Because if you go back to the original astronauts to a person, they talked about folks like Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon influencing them. If you talk to people who've been working in NASA for a long time, they talk about Star Wars and Star Trek, you know, and how the influences on them and their career choices and what we're seeing now. And, you know, that's influencing what we see in the commercial spaceflight industry as well. You know, so 50 years from now, you know, what is it now that's on TV, movies, books, streaming, comics, whatever, that's going to be cited as the influence for the folks then, and what are they going to create?
Yeah.
I have no idea, but, you know, it'll be fun for everybody to watch.
Well, you just did a launch pad lecture about rockets and ray guns.
It was about science fiction, yes.
You know, but when you think about it, when you think about ray guns, now we got lasers, you know. And some of those lasers now are been mounted on aircraft.
And ships.
And ships.
Yep, and, yeah. we're using them to, yeah. to shoot at
so
other
for
entities.
Me, we're about yep. that close to phasers.
Yeah, well, something like that. Yep, so yeah, there's changes in the concepts. You know, heck, people are trying to create lightsabers, you know,
yeah.
so and coming up with some pretty amazing stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So once again, there's, you know, the a sci-fi plot device that was utilized so that you could have these sword battles, you know, so
yeah.
as opposed to the guns, you know, kind of thing. So and George Lucas, you know, had that in his stories. Well, now that might become a reality. Was there really a need for it? No.
No.
But it's, you know, they're figuring out potentially how to do it. Might there be a need for it? Yeah, at some point, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. So we'll see. It's, like I said, it's very interesting to see, you know, the constant back and forth,
yeah.
you know, and what, you know, what we see in the real world that then gets utilized in science fiction, you know. So
no doubt. Well, if people want to see all this sci-fi, sci-fact, and all this other stuff.
Yep.
The museum's open.
Yep, it's
closing Christmas Day.
Yep, closing Christmas Day. We'll see. We may be closing early on Christmas Eve as well. So
yeah.
just a fair warning on that one. So we're waiting on what the governor's decisions are as far as that. It's weird when it's on a Sunday.
Yeah,
you know. So when Christmas Eve is on a Sunday. So in any case, our normal opening hours are 10 to 5 on Tuesday through Saturday and Monday. Sunday we're open up Wednesday through Saturday and Monday. We're closed on Tuesdays, and Sunday we're only open up from 12 to 5. So,
right.
yep.
So fantastic. Folks, get up and check out Sci-Fi Sci-Fact exhibit. I think you'll be astonished by it. Of course, there's so many other great displays inside
yep.
the Mexico Museum of Space Sisters.
And more to come.
The 2024 is going to be another year of change and exciting changes
yeah.
for the museum as well.
Satellite Gallery on March 8th. The Rockets, Missiles, Motors on July 4th. We're going to do the Governor's Gallery here in January up in the state capitol. So anybody up there who wants to see a version of the Sci-Fi Sci-Fact exhibit,
yeah.
go for it. So, and then we're also going to start working here at the beginning of the year on the total renovation of the fifth floor galleries.
Yeah.
So, and those should open up in the fall and winter.
And what's the cost to get into the museum?
So, that's another one that I blanked on. Yeah, so yeah, you can find it on our website. Yeah, so
yeah,
in any case,
space,
though, so and the
NMSpaceMuseum.org.
Yep. So yep. So like I said, my brain is so scattered right now with so many projects going. I mean, I need to run straight from this over to the MSC to check out stuff for the Governor's Gallery, and then run back up to the museum to check on the status of the construction going on up there. So
there you go. Check out NMSpaceMuseum.org. Find out prices, schedules, and how to become a member and get perks as well. Chris Horwell, always fun to have you in, my friend.
Thank you very much.
You betcha.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.